I usually don't do too well with series, because by the time I get partway into the series, a long time has gone by since I'm not here every week. But I'm continuing my series on Nehemiah. I'm not giving up on that yet. We're into chapter 5 at this point. In chapter 1, we find that Nehemiah, in coming to rebuild the walls of Jerusalem, he finds a number of challenges in his life. His first one was a personal challenge. It was being convicted of something he needed to do and how he would go about doing that thing that he was so passionate about. And then he wept before God and he put it into prayer. And the whole first chapter was basically a prayer that he was praying to meet that personal challenge that he was convicted of. In chapter 2, there was kind of a political challenge, if you will, and putting it together and finding out how it was that he was going to make this happen. And he put it before the king, and he used wisdom in figuring out how to go about making it happen, obviously putting it in God's hands. Gave that quick prayer before he spoke to the king, but yet boldly made his request known to him. Chapter 3 was kind of an organizational challenge, that here was the wall that needed to be put up, here were the people, and how was he going to put it all together? And chapter 3 was how the sections were put together with the various groups and so forth, and dealing with those people. Chapter 4 dealt with the challenge of outside persecution and the discouragement that was setting in, because there were those from outside that were trying to disrupt the building of the wall, trying to keep them from succeeding in that job that they were to do. And they overcame these challenges that were there one by one, and they were making progress on the wall. Nehemiah chapter 4 and verse 6 says that the wall was completed to half its height around the entire city, for the people had worked with enthusiasm. They met each challenge. Nehemiah 4 verse 21, it says, "We worked early and late, from sunrise to sunset." And now we come up with another challenge. The title of this section of Nehemiah, this chapter, I've entitled "The Enemy Within." Had a lot of challenges, many from the outside, most from the outside. We find in Nehemiah chapter 5, and verse 1, the New Living Translation says, "About this time, some of the men and their wives," it's interesting, the New King James Version says, "And there was a great outcry of the people and their wives." So there were people that complained and the wives complained. I thought the wives were people too, but I guess that's why I like New Living Translation. "About this time, some of the men and their wives raised a cry of protest." And what were they, who were they whining about, or who were they complaining? And they had valid complaints. It says, "against their fellow Jews." This wasn't one that was coming from the outside. This was one that was coming from within. The King James Version says, "against their brethren, the Jews." And so there were problems from within their own community that now become the challenge. People weren't treating each other as they should be treating each other. The enemy was each other. So you keep your place, obviously, in Nehemiah chapter 5, because that's where we'll be working out of. But Psalm chapter 55 is a very powerful psalm that, of course, Christ related to, David related to. I think we can relate to, as you look at the church. And of course, that's a lot of what this whole book of Nehemiah is about. It's about the building of God's work and doing God's work and the church and the challenges that we have. And a lot of our challenges have unfortunately come from within, in the church. Psalm 55 verse 12 says, "If an enemy were insulting me, I could endure it. If a foe were raising himself against me, I could hide from him. But it is you, a man like myself, a companion, my close friend, with whom I once enjoyed sweet fellowship as we walked with the throng at the house of God. Does this remind you of some of your former friends in the church? Unfortunately, it does me. I've been struggling with that, particularly the last probably several weeks and few months maybe. Some of it having to do with, you know, the death of my dad and my mother-in-law and my brother and people passing and the generation going on and the generation that were foundation of the church of God in this current era are going on. And then you look at the friends that I used to have that are now with other groups that aren't as friendly as we were as best friends, and another group splits, so now there's more gone from the best friends. And frankly, it's been a personal struggle for me and that I'm working on. But this kind of reminds me of that, as these crazy things that the one that we're companions and close friends that you don't have that fellowship with anymore. And the reason is because we've kind of destroying ourselves from within. Much like this chapter. Nehemiah chapter 5 and verse 2, they were saying, and here are some of the issues, and again, it's not these exact issues, but in principle, things that people are doing to one another that are wrong. Actions that aren't treating one another as we ought to treat one another. It says, they were saying, we have such large families and we need more food to survive. They were working, as I just said, from Nehemiah chapter 4:21, working early, working late, sunset or sunrise to sunset, and they weren't having time to tend to their own crops, their own little gardens or whatever. And they were, in fact, not having enough food to survive. They were getting little support from others who had more. In fact, here, as we go on, we see that those who had more were neglecting those who had less and actually taking advantage of those who had less. This little section here reminds me of the current crisis in this world, in this country, you could say, from people who were the big cats who got greedy for money and were taking advantage of the people with their homes and that needed loans and that type of thing. In principle, again, there's something wrong here within the group in this case. Verse 3, the others said, we have mortgaged our fields and vineyards and our homes to get food during the famine. It does. It reminds me of people right now. I mean, people will say, I've taken my 401k and borrowed on it in order to be able to make ends meet, in order to be able to pay my mortgage. I'm going into debt. I'm upside down on my house payment. This is exactly what was going on here. Verse 4, and others said, we have had to borrow money on our fields and vineyards to pay our taxes. Verse 5, we belong to the same family as those who are wealthy, and our children are just like theirs, yet we must sell our children into slavery just to get enough money to live. This is kind of an extreme of it. But they had to say, okay, well, my daughter is, 23 years old and she's old enough to go out and so I'll sell her into kind of an indentured servants, to the people with the big houses. And the people in the big houses were some of the other members of the Jewish community here, taking advantage of those who had less. It says, we've already sold some of our daughters and we're helpless to do anything about it. And our fields and vineyards are already mortgaged to others. A financial crisis at that time. People underwater, in debt, wealthy Jews taking advantage of the less fortunate Jews. Well, we can make a little money off of this crisis. And they would. Whatever it took to make a buck. Deuteronomy chapter 23, we kind of set the stage for some of what Nehemiah is going to discuss with these people. Nehemiah chapter 23 and verse 19. God laid down some basic laws, and he said, among your community, among your brethren, Deuteronomy 23:19, it says, do not charge your brother interest. Now, the King James Version says usury. You can look elsewhere in the scripture, and an appropriate amount of interest is not forbidden. An unreasonable amount of interest is. And that's what this is talking about. And it says, whether on money or food or anything else that may earn interest, you may charge a foreigner interest, but not a brother Israelite, so that the Lord your God may bless you in everything you put your hand in the land that you are entering to possess. And basically saying, even, you know, among your own community, maybe charge enough interest to cover your own expenses. And if it's somebody outside and it's a business, and you can charge enough interest to make a little money, as a bank might do, and it's a reasonable amount even, then that would be one thing. It says, don't take advantage of your brother. You know, pay special attention not to try to take advantage of anybody. The word interest in the Hebrew is nashak, and it means to strike with a sting as a serpent. And so it says, don't use interest, something that's going to bite and something that's going to end up harming them. So don't strike with a serpent. It said figuratively to oppress with interest on a loan. The King James Version, the word is used as bite in places, and also to lend upon usury. Reminds me of Isaiah chapter 58. Isaiah chapter 58 and verse 4. Isaiah chapter 58 here is talking about fasting and about getting close to God and about learning to treat others well and so forth. But these people, even in their fasting, Isaiah 58 verse 4, it says, indeed you fast for strife and debate and to strike with the fist of wickedness. So that word, nashak, to strike, to sting as a serpent. So you strike with the fist of wickedness, and you will not fast as you do this day to make your voice heard on high. You have to consider other people. Fast for the right reasons, to humble yourself, to draw close to God, to be more like Jesus Christ in loving service. So these people were taking a bite out of their fellow countrymen. They were, in essence, doing the serpent's work. You know, the serpent wants to strike at all of us to bring us down, as the serpent struck at Eve and Adam in trying to get them to do the wrong thing. And Satan, of course, is alive and well. And so this can apply. It's not just an interest thing, and that's not all this is talking about. But in principle, anything that's going to strike particularly another member, another one of our brothers. And, of course, we want to treat all people well, and we understand that. But shouldn't it be particularly those of our own household that we should treat well? Philippians chapter 1 and verse 15, you know, Paul was addressing this same type of issue here. Here are people with the truth of God, with the gospel of Jesus Christ, the gospel of the kingdom of God, and within the body, we find in Philippians 1, verse 15, Paul said, some indeed preach Christ even from envy and strife. You know, you got people that should be treating one another well, but yet they're doing it for their own greedy purposes instead of the right reasons. It says, and some also from goodwill. And so there's some that are doing a good job at doing the work, and some are doing it for their own greedy purposes. Verse 16, the former preach Christ from selfish ambition, not sincerely, supposing to add affliction to my chains. In principle, this is what Nehemiah was talking about, as someone who was out to get, for his own gain, to do what they were doing, especially to fellow brethren, and adding affliction to the chains. And that's what the people of Nehemiah's time were doing there in Jerusalem, is adding affliction to the chains of having to work day in and day out on the temple. And I say it's a sad but true legacy that oftentimes the church has generated more problems from within than has been put on the church from without. And I think this is part of what this chapter is talking about, is how do we handle that type of situation? How did the leader, Nehemiah, handle a situation where there was an enemy from within? And there are some good lessons for us. Fortunately, you can go through history and find that people haven't applied these things, but these are good principles, and when they come up, whether it's in our own congregation or it's another member somewhere else in the world, and they find these strifes and these strikings and not getting along and treating one another the way we shouldn't, how do we handle that? Well, here's some ideas on that. I want to talk about seven ways to confront the enemy within. Seven ways to confront the enemy within. Number one, manage your anger the right way. Yeah, when there is an enemy within, so someone is not treating us well, or we don't treat somebody else well and they're reacting to us, oftentimes we get a little angry about it. And there are instances where we should be angry about it. Again, it depends on what circumstance is going on, but we look at verse 6 of Nehemiah chapter 5, and, you know, he listened to all of them say all the things that people are doing to one another, and it really ticked him off. He said, "I became extremely angry when I heard their outcry and these complaints." He said, if all this stuff is true, you know, and you're actually having to sell your daughters as indentured servants, you're not able to feed your families, and you got other people that are living high on the hog, not a hog, we're eating hogs, but living well, and these people are starving. He said, that should not be. And he was really, really upset. Aristotle had a good statement regarding becoming angry and being angry. Aristotle said, anyone can become angry. That is easy. But to be angry with the right person, to the right degree, at the right time, for the right purpose, and in the right way, that is not easy. Right? So anger is a natural reaction. There are many, many scriptures where it says God got angry. We look in Mark chapter 3, verse 5, it says, after looking around at them, Jesus here, looking around at them with anger and sorrow at the hardness of their hearts. So Christ had anger at those with the hard hearts and sorrow about it. But mismanaged anger is sinful. Ephesians 4:26 says, be angry and sin not. So there's a right way to handle anger that will naturally come as a result of various things that happen in our lives. Anger is a God-given emotion that is really designed to stir us to action. But as Aristotle said, you know, needs to be the right action. God says needs to be the right action and a godly reaction and action when things happen that are angry. We can't be passive to wrongdoing. Sometimes I think it's more of a sin not to be angry at situations. Because, no big deal. You know, being passive is not a godly attribute. But when we see wrongdoing that needs to be handled, we've got to handle the anger properly. So in confronting the enemy, particularly here the enemy within, when we see a brother or sister doing something that is hurting somebody else, and whether as a group or whether whatever it is, we get angry at that, right? Okay, number two, seven keys to confronting the enemy within. Number two is get into the right frame of mind. Now, this is something Nehemiah did. Now, we saw Nehemiah elsewhere where the king asked him a question and he kind of had thought a lot about it to begin with. I mean, that was obvious. And at that time, he said he prayed to God. So that was that quick prayer to kind of reaffirm the things he had thought through. Here, it said he got very angry, and it says, verse 7, After seriously considering the matter. After seriously considering the matter, the New English Bible says, I mastered my feelings. Okay, so when he saw this wrong being done, it made him really, really upset. And he said, I can't handle this right now. This is not the time to approach these people. At least not in the state of mind I'm in. And that same thing that sometimes we need to do in a marriage or another relationship is, I don't want to react right now. I just got to sit back. I've got to think about it. I've got to reason it through and make sure it's done in the right way, in the right manner. A lot of times people fly off the handle and make a lot of mistakes. The English Standard Version on verse 7 says, I took counsel with myself. Don't you have to talk to yourself sometime? Okay. Really, you don't want to do that, do you? And you say, okay, so what should I do? I'll go, man, if I go, and you'd probably talk to yourself this way, you know, if I react right now, I'm going to say something I'm going to regret. Or I'm going to do something that you don't want me to do. And that I probably shouldn't do. And so you're talking to yourself like Nehemiah did here. And he's settling himself down and say, okay, what's the right way to go about this? So basically he's saying, I mastered my feelings, discussed the options within myself to see what I ought to do. Okay, so he's taking this very seriously because it's a serious situation. He gave himself a little get-the-facts speech. Okay, now I might have been hearing things, maybe things aren't exactly as they seem from this one side. How are people going to react? What would be the right way for me to say this? There are a lot of things I would like to say. There are a lot of things that would be probably right if I said it in one sense, but not righteous if I said it. So he's given himself this speech about what to do. And he settled down. He looked at it objectively. He didn't react emotionally, even though he was very angry. So then we find the third step here in Seven Keys to Confronting the Enemy Within is talk to the right people. Okay, he had heard one side, and then he had to figure, okay, this needs to be confronted. This needs to be discussed. It can't be let go. It's just wrong. So who do I talk to? What do I do? So verse 7, he says, so I accused the nobles and officials, saying to them. Okay, he talked to the people who were the offenders. The New Living Translation in verse 7, he says, I told them, you are hurting your own relatives by charging interest when they borrow money. Okay, so he discussed it with the people that were the offenders. We don't talk about people. We talk to them or talk with them, with the people that are involved. Because you could go and you could get a bigger uprising, and, you know, he could have gone and said, well, we'll get all these other people that are being offended here, and we'll just have an uprising. We'll go take over their places and we'll sack their homes and we'll get all the food we need and that'll show them. Well, it could have been a lot of ways that he could have approached it. He went and talked with them. Isn't that what God says to do? You know, is our intent to restore a relationship or destroy a person's reputation? Now their reputation in one sense deserved destroying, if you will, because of what they were doing. But that's not the right approach. You want to restore the relationship. Why are you doing what you're doing? Gossip is when we talk to people who are not a part of the problem and not a part of the solution. You need to talk to various people with various things, but are they part of the problem and need to be talked with? Or are they part of the solution and need to be talked with? Then you need to include them in order to come to a resolution. Putting something out on the internet is not talking to the right people. I'll tell you, some of the things that have been done in the last couple of years with, you hear a story and you put it out on Facebook or whatever so everybody can see about it and you can get public opinion on your side. It was like, frankly, I have no clue what happened with this Trayvon and Zimmerman situation. I've seen a lot of reports, you know, and people put it out there and say, yep, Zimmerman, he's guilty, and he never did it. You know, he just attacked our guy, and our guy never did anything, and he attacked him because he's black, and this is a racial thing, and, you know, they raised all these things, and I don't know. You don't know. But, boy, a lot of people out there do, you know, and they put it out to public opinion and tried the guy, and maybe Zimmerman's guilty and will be put to death as a reason. I don't know. Probably not that, but maybe he's not as guilty as some make him to believe. Point is, you talk to the right people. Matthew chapter 18. Matthew chapter 18. You know, I can't help as I go through here think about this recent fiasco that occurred with United about a year and a half ago and the time preceding. That this is basically that type of thing. You don't know all sides of either side. You don't. I don't know all sides of either side. But people act as though they did and split a church as a result. And it's just, I don't know, still a shame. Matthew chapter 18 and verse 15. It says, if your brother sins against you, go and rebuke him in private. That's where you start, is with that individual. Now, I think some of these things were done even with the crisis and things, but I think there was just something that didn't allow this part to work. Whatever that might be. You go to him and rebuke him in private, and if he listens to you, you've won your brother. And that's what you want, is go to the people involved, see if that can be resolved. And then if you need to, take one or two more with you, so that the testimony of two or three witnesses, every fact may be established. And again, I think this is where Nehemiah is coming from. He probably talked with enough people. I don't think it was just a couple of people coming to him, and he probably, you know, with his anger, he said, well, let me check this out a little bit and talk to a few more people and got some more facts and made sure that he knew what he was doing before he approached these guys that were guilty. And then, if he pays no attention to them, tell it to the church. And so the circle of confrontation sometimes needs to be expanded. The circle of confrontation should be expanded only as necessary and when necessary. And the circle of confrontation should be those involved in the offense. And sometimes that offense gets wider. This was one thing that was wider. It wasn't one person against one person. It wasn't one family against one family. It was affecting the whole nation there. And so it had to be expanded. But he did go and talk to the people first. A little leaven leavens the whole lump. You know, in this circumstance, he couldn't just talk to the offending people because so many people were offended by it, it had to be discussed on a greater level. And then he took it to there next, as the principle is in Matthew chapter 18. So he ended up dealing with it in a more public way. With a reason. And again, as we'll see, not to humiliate, not to build himself up and let everybody know he's in charge, but to resolve the issue. And it needed to be resolved in a more public manner in this particular instant. Verse 7 of Nehemiah chapter 5 continues in verse 7. So I called a large assembly against them. This is the next step. Now, the first one was I accused the nobles and officials, and he accused them because he gathered the facts. It was obvious. And he had wherewith to accuse them. Okay, and then he called a large assembly against them. And the New International Version says, I called together a large meeting to deal with them. New Living Translation, I called a public meeting to deal with the problem. Expanded because it was necessary. Galatians chapter 2 verse 14, I won't turn there right now, but Galatians 2:14, when Paul confronted Peter, he did so in a more public manner because Peter had offended a large group of people. And it says, Galatians 2:14, when I saw they were not acting in line with the truth of the gospel, I said to Peter in front of them all. It was necessary to confront it so everybody knew that this was being dealt with. So number four, in dealing with the enemy within, is to use the right tone and be the right example. There are a lot of ways you can confront someone who's in the wrong. When you know you're in the right, when you know people have been offended. Here's the way Nehemiah confronted them. He confronted them in a reasonable manner. Nehemiah chapter 5 and verse 9. In the Living Translation says, then I pressed further. Okay, I confronted them. I told them, hey, there's something wrong here. Now we have to deal with this. Then I pressed further. And he said, "What? Now what you're doing is not right." And he probably referred back to Deuteronomy where it says, you know, the charging of usury is not a biblical principle. He said, should you not walk in the fear of our God? He says, really, the way we need to be acting is in a godly manner. Now here are some scriptures and here are some principles that show that you're not acting in a godly manner. And he presented the facts of what they should be doing as opposed to what they were doing. And he also added, in order to avoid being mocked by the enemy nations, he said, look, we're called God's people. You know, we're the Israelitish nations here. And the Jews in particular here, most of us. And he said, God made us a special people. And he gave us special laws, and he gave us a special way to live. And he says, the way we're acting, I mean, we've just had, you know, Sanballat and Tobiah attacking us from without, and now we're destroying ourselves from within. I mean, think about what they're going to say. How many of you thought that when we're going through some of our difficulties and whatever period of time in the past, you know, within the church? You say, I'm not sure I want somebody visiting us right now. Because what are they going to say? What example does Christ say we should set, and what example are we setting? That's a valid argument, and it should shame people. I'll tell you, and I've mentioned this before, but I wrote letters to the people that were the movers and shakers of this whole thing that occurred, and I sent it to them all. I didn't send it to you, but I sent it to them and said, look, what are the members feeling about a bad example that is being set? So you got to think about that. Put down your pride, whatever. You know, John chapter 13:35 says, by this shall all men know you are my disciples if you love one another. Okay, so do all men know? This is essentially what Nehemiah was saying. And, you know, also, I mean, you say what is right and what God says we should be doing and put it, you know, in that manner. It's not me, it's God. But the other one is in using the right tone and being the right example is to appeal to your own example. And then have an example. Okay? You can't appeal to your example if it's a bad one. But verse 8, and he says, look, you haven't been doing what's right and you should not walk. Now, you should walk in the fear of our God. And he says, we've done our best, Nehemiah and his troop and his people, the ones that were near him and that had a right idea of just wanting to get the work done and wanting to help the people do the work. He says, we've done our best to buy back our Jewish countrymen who were sold to foreigners. But now you sell your own countrymen and we have to buy them back. You know, we're having to make up for some of the things that you're doing that's just causing more problems to a problem that's here already. And we've been trying to do our part. And you're just making it hard for us to resolve this issue with these people. Verse 10, he says, even as I, as well as my brothers and servants, have been lending them money and grain, and the implication, without interest. And we've been, you know, helping them to be able to keep building the wall and for them not to go into foreclosure. And we've been lending them, we've been helping them. But yet you end up charging them this incredible amount of interest, and then anything we're doing, you're countering. You know, our actions speak louder than words. Now, you know, that's why, you know, whatever anybody else does, you know, when you get into a situation, how you act according to a godly manner is the way you need to act. You know, so, well, somebody else is doing the wrong thing, so I don't have to do the right thing. I can do the same bad thing they're doing. No. You got to change. And even appealing to their conscience in a right way. It says in verse 8, last part of verse 8, he says, but now you sell your own countrymen and we have to buy them back. And they remained silent and couldn't say a word. It was put in such a way to where, I mean, when they looked at it, it says, oops, yeah, I guess we are taking advantage of these people. We are doing the wrong thing. And they saw Nehemiah's example and the example of those who were his group of leaders. And they said, wow, you know, that really is a good example. That's what we ought to be doing. We want to do what's best for the group. We want to get the work done. Okay? And they were convicted by it in the way that it was presented. They remained silent and could not say a word. Okay, a fifth way to confront the enemy within, present the right issues. Again, back in verse 7, he says, after seriously considering the matter, I accused the nobles and officials. New Revised Standard Version says, I brought charges against the nobles and officials. In other words, he gathered the right information to present so that it wouldn't be, well, that's just a rumor, and that's not true, and then they discount anything you have to say. You know, you got to do the Julie thing. You got to go and find out the facts, and you got to get enough information to be able to convict them, and to try them and let them not be able to say a word about it. Go ahead and turn to Galatians chapter 2, and verse 11. And this is really the same thing, and it's happened throughout history. And God allows these things to happen through history to test and to try us and see how we're going to react individually and if we're going to do the right thing. But Galatians 2, verse 11, Paul is saying that when Peter came to Antioch, I withstood him to his face because he was to be blamed. You know, Peter was the offending party here. Peter was the enemy from within in this circumstance, who was being a hypocrite in the way he acted, who was hurting people, who was bringing reproach against the truth and against the church. And he explains, here are the facts. For before certain men came from James, he would eat with the Gentiles. But when those came from Jerusalem, because Peter didn't want to be seen with these Gentile members. I mean, what a horrible thing. I mean, can you imagine that being on the news today? But when they came, he withdrew and separated himself, fearing those who were of the circumcision. Verse 13, and the rest of the Jews also played the hypocrite with him. Is that leaven? That leavened the whole lump. And others came along and they said, oh yeah, well, we don't want to be associated with these Gentiles. So they withdrew. It says, and Barnabas was even carried away with their hypocrisy. And we already read then where Paul, he said, I confronted them before them all. Because this was such an egregious error that needed to be handled and not let go. And you can imagine Paul was very upset. And the enemy being from within. Why should we bring reproach on God by behaving this way? And shouldn't we really behave in a godly manner instead? Okay, so he presented the right issues, accused them of the things that were actually the case, and not a lot of rumors, not lies, not suppositions, and they remained silent and couldn't say a word. Okay, and then when you get to that point where they realize, okay, we've made a mistake here. Now what are we going to do? Well, you don't just leave it up in limbo and let it go, but you ask them to do the right thing. Yeah, I've done the wrong thing. Okay, now, are you going to do the right thing? What are we going to do to repair this? And it's interesting how he put it in verse 10 of Nehemiah 5. He says, please let us stop charging this interest. And even the way he put it, you know, because you dirty dogs, you know, he already said that he was not charging them interest, that he was giving this, and it goes on in the last part of Nehemiah 5, just saying that he never did take advantage of the people at all. But here he said, let us stop charging them interest, or this interest. And he's getting a specific commitment. Okay, are you going to stop the wrong that is being done? Well, that's probably the right thing. We stop that. And then verse 11, he says, return their fields and vineyards and olive groves and houses to them. You know, it's not just stop doing the wrong, but apologize to them. And you know, and when there's not a monetary thing, if there's a monetary thing, then there should be a restitution of that. But it would be when there's an offense within the church to member or group with group, is that you stop doing what you're doing wrong and then apologies, you know, to forgive and to ask that let's reconcile things and get back the way it needs to be. And he also asked for not just a specific commitment, but an immediate commitment. It's got to happen now. The New King James Version says, restore now to them. Okay, let's not just put it off till sometime, hey, if you get to it. But look, this needs to be solved now. This cannot go on. We need a resolution. Another translation says, return their fields and vineyards and olive groves and houses to them immediately. And verse 12, it says, and they responded, we will return these things and require nothing more from them. We will do as you say. It's had a really good outcome. You know, that the wrong was stopped. A restitution was made to those that were offended. They were able to feed their families. They were able to get their daughters back who were in indentured servitude. And then they were able to continue building the wall, which they did. But they had to solve that problem from within. And then number 7 is help them stay on the right track. Help them stay on the right track. You tell them why. You know, Nehemiah appealed to Scripture and to their conscience. He said, look, this is not a godly way. Shouldn't we live in the fear of God? Shouldn't we do things in a godly manner and treating one another this way and appeal to their conscience in it? So tell them why and then show them how. Nehemiah said, now here's the example that I'm doing. You know, I can't really afford it a lot more than you guys can. In fact, I can afford it a little less, but I'm helping, I'm lending, and I'll get it back. You know, as time goes on, we get the wall built, people get back, and he didn't say that they wouldn't pay back what Nehemiah was giving, so they would have to do their part. It wasn't just a handout. We're not charging the interest that is so much and added on to the many taxes that were going on there with the king and so forth. And so he showed them how. He reviewed his own example. And then get them started. He called for a specific and immediate commitment. He said, okay, so we're going to do this. And when you come to a confrontation and you sit down, you discuss it, and you don't just leave it and say, okay, I hope this is the last I hear this. You sit down and you say, okay, now what are we going to do to make sure this doesn't happen again? I mean, isn't that important? You know, I know we've said that so many times we didn't make a resolution with this latest church issue, but we've said, okay, we don't want this to happen again. What do we need to do to build a better relationship, to not let ourselves get in the way again, to not let Satan get advantage? And you've got to do make something specific and a commitment. And then you've got to keep them going. You got to give an action plan. Okay, exactly what are you going to do? Look at verse 12 of Nehemiah 5. So I summoned the priests and made everyone take an oath to do this. Okay, so you said you're going to do it. Now, you promise that you're going to give back. You know, what is it you're going to give back? Well, you know, I did take advantage of them, and I've got their daughter working in her house there as a maid, so I'll let her go back. In fact, I'll pay her a little, you know, to be the maid instead of that situation. So that it'll help the family. We're going to do the right thing. And verse 13, you know, we also let them know there'd be consequences to further wrong action. He said, I shook the folds of my robe and said, my God, likewise, shake from this house and property everyone who doesn't keep this promise. May he be shaken out and have nothing. If you don't do what you said you would do, which is the right thing, then you got to answer to God for that. And then you're going to be in trouble. Okay, so just do the right thing and make the promise you will. And then Nehemiah got consensus. We had the group together. He said, okay, people are going to do the right thing. Now you'll give back to him what you took from him, right? Right. Okay. Shake hands. All right, shake hands. You're not going to do that anymore, are you? No, I'm not going to do that anymore. Okay, and we're going to move ahead, and you're not going to be talking against these guys that took advantage of you, are you? No, we won't take advantage of them anymore, or we won't talk about them. We forgive them. We'll move on. So they got consensus. Nehemiah chapter 5, verse 13. At this, the whole assembly said, amen, and praise the Lord. Oh, Nehemiah, thanks so much. God, thank you for intervening. Says they praise the Lord. I mean, any time you get a situation that's this serious, you do what you can to resolve it, but when a situation gets resolved, it's God that has intervened in the minds of the offenders. And we certainly allow God to work in us, but the whole assembly said, that's a good idea, that's a great plan, amen. And they praised God for this problem being resolved. And the people did as they promised. When we confront in the right way, when we resolve the issue, God gets the praise. It's not some great negotiator's ability. You know, we've heard it said many times at different things when these various splits occur, whatever, that we'll do something, well, we'll never let this happen again. No, you won't. You should do your best to try that it doesn't happen again and to put things in place where you're going to treat one another well and not offend. But if it is successful, it is God that has allowed it to be successful and brought it about. One year my dad was hunting, in the many years that he hunted, and he found two deer carcasses. The antlers were interlocked, and some of you may have run across something similar. I looked up on the internet locked antlers, and I found dozens of pictures of carcasses from two stags that were fighting, and they interlocked their horns and they couldn't get free of each other, and they both died as a result of the fight. Well, that's not what we want. When fights happen, when problems occur, we want to face one another. We want to deal with the issues, but don't remain so locked in the fight, so locked in the argument that both die. And that's what will happen from within if we don't handle things in a godly manner. Don't let the same thing happen to us. When battles arise among us, take the steps necessary to resolve the issue, to reconcile, so that we don't destroy ourselves from within.